Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News.
From high atop the Milkpacking District in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon, this, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour, or thereabouts, distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
Protesters continue to occupy various places. Cops chase a naked man through Salem. And TriMet increases security on MAX trains because, you know, all the stabbings.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed, really, for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon. I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Monday, October 17th, 2011. A 22-year-old man was arrested Sunday morning after fleeing from police through Northeast Salem in the nude. Daniel Z. Galani, a Salem transient, was initially spotted illegally entering parked cars, according to the detective who chased him down. A witness flagged down a deputy and alerted him of the crime and then pointed to a man running across Lancaster Drive towards a Walgreens store. The deputy caught up with Galani inside the store and said he was wearing nothing but a jacket. He was nude from the waist down. Then the deputy said Galani tossed the jacket and ran out the door while he was trying to arrest him.
You know, that never happened to Alec. I'm sorry. Every time you say Daniel and then arrested in pantless, I think Baldwin. Oh, sorry. Okay. Sorry.
With the help of Good Samaritans, the deputy finally caught up with Galani and deployed a taser to take him into custody. Galani was booked into the Marion County Jail on charges of unlawfully entering a vehicle, resisting arrest, and disorderly conduct. He was also booked for a parole violation on a prior conviction of meth possession.
Okay, then.
So,
why, hello, it is Legion of News. Our apologies for the delayed opening and the truncated program today. It is gremlins on the inside of the thing tube. Lol, yours. They're in my things doing your deals. Hello, it's Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Monday, October 17th, 2011. Thank you for coming by. Later on this hour, you got your entertainment news, also science on the march. If you want to get this program later on today via iTunes, where it won't be any longer, so don't get your hopes up about that. You can get it via iTunes. You can also get it as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or legionofnews.com. If you'd like to take it with you on your mobile device, God bless you. And you can do that at mobile.cascadia.fm. That is mobile.cascadia.fm. At the desk de news, here is Don Taylor.
The Occupy Wall Street protests are aimed at least in part at the corrupting influence of big public political donations, but apparently small ones are more than welcome. As the demonstrations hit the one-month mark on Monday, organizers have announced that supporters have contributed more than $300,000 to the cause.
Well, sellouts.
Much of the money has come through the movement's website, where backers are also shipping blankets, pillows, medical supplies, and even swim goggles to guard against pepper spray. The money has been deposited into a union-owned bank. The goods warehoused in a union-owned building near the protest downtown Manhattan headquarters.
Does that mean that some of the Occupy protest people can just stay home and get paid anyway?
I think so.
Excellent. Unions going to work for you.
Everyone's a scab at the Occupy protest march. Oh, wait. Compared to the amounts donated to big political campaigns, $300,000 isn't much. Still, it's a sign of the protest's growing sophistication and increasingly diverse support. After a weekend in which demonstrations spread to more than 900 cities worldwide and seem to grow in New York, organizers' challenge is to keep the building keep building momentum. Oft-quoted political analyst Larry Sabato told USA Today, "The easier part is protesting. It's the nitty-gritty work of actual politics, day in and day out, that makes a difference in the election season." Speaking of politics, President Obama is looking increasingly like a supporter of the movement, if they'll have him. The Washington Post reported on Friday that Obama's team is looking to capitalize on anti-Wall Street sentiment as much as possible. Advisor David Plouffe told the Post, "We intend to make it one of the central elements of the campaign next year. One of the main elements of the contrast will be the president passed Wall Street reform and our opponent and the other party wanted to repeal it." Meanwhile, it was a global day of rage, supposedly, over the weekend. There were demonstrations around the world in more than 900 cities against economic inequality and corporate greed on Saturday. Most were peaceful, except in Rome, where violence broke out and dozens were injured in the city's worst violence in years, according to the BBC.
Here's the thing about Catholics. They know how to do violence. They really do. There's just no getting around that fact.
La Stampa newspaper said, "Yesterday, we once again showed the world the anomaly of Italy, and today, again, we have to feel shame." Bloomberg cites local newspaper Corriere della Sera reporting that police arrested 12 out of 20 people that were held yesterday, noting that violent demonstrators only accounted for about 2,000 out of the 200,000 who turned out. The hooded protesters burned cars and smashed bank windows, while police claimed they found unexploded petrol bombs in several streets. Around 175 protesters were arrested in Chicago early Sunday morning after they set up tents in a downtown plaza and refused to leave. In New York, at least 88 people were arrested, according to the New York Times, for a variety of violations, including criminal trespassing and refusing to leave Washington Square at midnight. There were tense moments at several points Saturday, including when protesters tried to stage a sit-in at Citibank. The New York Observer cites a protester saying customers had gone into the bank to close their accounts, but were locked inside by security. As most clamored for a lack of jobs, the AP finds a 25-year-old who quit his job in Texas to go protest in New York.
Well done.
Yes, sir. But there were protests across the country Saturday and a few arrests in several other U.S. cities, including Minneapolis. Los Angeles, the march took on a decidedly festive atmosphere, according to the New York Times, noting for many it was a family event. Meanwhile, a bride and groom from Ohio joined the protest in Occupy Cincinnati before their wedding this weekend. The couple decided to take wedding photos with the protesters in Pyatt Park. Bride Carolyn Hyatt said she would have been there, too, if she hadn't been so busy planning, you know, the wedding.
This is protest one?
Yes.
To bring attention to what's going on here. It's so great to be able to use this opportunity
and
in that
stuff.
Way. It really is. I'm just so happy to be here and so glad to support everybody. I've had some friends that have been here, and if I had the time and wasn't... dealing with all this.
You know,
I might have
a little busy. Totally.
Yeah. Groom Nathan Lee, not to be confused with Nathan Lane, gives his thoughts on the photos.
We thought this was such a tremendously fun backdrop.
And what
way to remember the time that we're getting married.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Meanwhile, about 50 people marched across the St. John's Bridge here in Portland on Sunday.
They were just trying to get somewhere better. They were just trying to leave, and we keep turning them back.
Get the hell out of St. John's.
We keep forcing them back in with small gunfire, but they continue to try to get to other environs.
A woman named Miriam, who did not want her last name revealed, said,
"It's such a clatch."
She said, "We have a lot to say here, and we're a very 99% community because we're not rich."
Oh, for the love of... Okay. It seems like if you're a very 99% community, you're also redundant in like three different ways. But I'm just saying, that's only if you use English as like an actual language. Don't worry about it, though.
The group of 50 people occupied the St. John's Bridge for several hours Saturday afternoon.
That's what they can occupy. And occupy my sack.
Miriam said, "It's time for everybody to rise up, and now we're a part of it in St. John's."
Okay, no one named Miriam rises up against anything. That doesn't happen. That's not really the way that it works.
She organized the people on the bridge.
Okay, here's what I want to happen right now. I shouldn't even give this idea away, as I sometimes say, and yet I do, because Rick Emerson gives. Rick Emerson is a man of the people. Rick Emerson, he gives deeply of himself. And not just, not just in the dirty way. Here's an idea that I'm just going to give for free to somebody who's looking to rouse a little rabble. Somebody who's looking to muck a little rake. If anybody out there is looking for... if anybody out there fancy... Who is that guy?
A kerfuffle? A free-for-all? A hullabaloo?
Not so much a hullabaloo as a debacle.
Oh. Okay.
But the fun kind.
No.
Like with spats.
Like a fiasco.
No, like a fiesto.
Mm.
Or a fiesca.
Or carnival.
What would it be a fiesca? Fiesto. If it's sort of a fun...
Well, fiesta is fun.
No, but I'm saying if fiesta and fiasco.
Oh. Yeah.
Doesn't Fiasco sound like it ought to be a car if it wasn't a disaster?
Fiesta. A Fiesta.
The new Plymouth Fiasco.
Yeah.
Feel this worthiness. Oh, God. Okay, it's one of those days. We got to be careful. I just did, like, a whole thing there.
Yeah.
I should wait.
You have no idea. Oh, okay.
I'm going to give... Why this great idea I was going to give away for free just
no.
now.
But, oh, no. Let's wait.
I'm going to wait next hour. Let's Hold on. Let me write this down. Great idea.
Great idea. Yeah, because that'll differentiate it from all the other ideas.
Great idea number two.
Yes, see, there you go.
Because I've already had great
Second
idea
great
number
idea.
One. All right. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Here is Don Taylor.
The estranged brother of Hustler magazine publisher Larry Flint is suing him in Ohio.
Is this Jiminy Flint? Jimmy?
Jimmy Flint.
Jiminy Flint.
Jiminy Flint. Faith and Begora. He's a tiny, tiny, jolly little Flint.
Okay, yes?
Yes.
I was thinking he was a cricket.
Yeah, that too. I'm thinking he's an Irish cricket. Anyway, he says he was wrongly fired from his job at Flint's pornography company and is suing Larry Flint for $20 million. He says his brother stopped paying him his $250,000 annual salary in 2009 as part of an effort to squeeze him out of the business. Larry Flint's publicist declined to comment. Jimmy Flint is seeking at least $20 million in compensation and damages in the federal lawsuit he filed last week in Cincinnati. In May, a federal judge ruled that Larry Flint is the sole owner of his pornography company, and his brother isn't entitled to half the business. The judge said Jimmy Flint provided no evidence he was ever a partner.
No, but he does look like Thomas Jane, so he's got that going for him.
Does he really?
Well, a little bit.
Wow, well, there's...
Back in the day. I don't know if he does now.
That's a serious
it's
difference
an asset.
To Gene Pool.
It really is. It is, because... Because
Larry Flint, not an attractive man.
Larry Flint just looks like a frog that's had his bones removed.
Yeah.
Just sits there and just, you know. He's like... And he always sounds... like off-mode Michigan J. Frog. So that's a bonus as well. Larry, what do you think about that? Okay, that's great, Larry. Thanks.
As soon as you close the door, man. Hello,
he's
my
singing
baby.
And dancing.
Hello. Yeah.
Not so much the dancing.
Yeah.
You're listening to Legion of News. Hello. Here's Don Taylor.
Two-time Indianapolis 500 winner Dan Weldon died Sunday of unsurvivable injuries sustained during a multi-car wreck at the Las Vegas Indy 300. He was 33 years old. The rest of the race, a marquee event of the IZOD IndyCar World Championships, was canceled. Stu Blomer was at the race and spoke about what he saw.
This Indy. Is Indy 1. Indy, my friend, I'm so pleased you're... Oh, I'm sorry.
This was totally beyond anything I've ever seen. It was just total carnage for a while.
Lou Liebig was another witness at the race.
You had probably three full safety crews around him. He was not moving in the car. I mean, we were able to look right at him here, and it didn't look good.
We should save our crass jokes for next hour.
Yes,
I've been prepping them all weekend.
I'm sure
you
will.
Polishing them and honing them in my woodshed.
Okay.
You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us.
The news shed of snark.
What?
The tool shed of snark.
Yes, that's exactly what it is. Yes, I've been honing them in the... I've been workshopping them in the Catskills. Coming up later on this hour, you get your Science on the March and entertainment news. Next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program. Today, Snuff Watch, Cannibal Watch, Taser Watch. We will recap last night's season premiere of Walking Dead, and Mr. Aaron Duran will join us in the studio today for the week in Geek.
In the studio, actually here.
Actually here. Oregonian music editor Ryan White, we will be speaking to him either, probably via the phone today. He's got a whole thing.
It's like everything's backwards and crazy.
The whole deal that's going on with a thing inside of it wrapped in a sweater. So that's going to happen next hour. We'll talk to Mr. Ryan White from the Oregonian. Aaron Duran will be in the studio for the Week in Geek. Walking Dead recap, Snuff Watch, Cannibal Watch, Taser Watch, and more. Here is Don Taylor.
A woman was arrested early Sunday for allegedly stabbing a man on a Portland MAX train during an argument. This was the third stabbing involving a MAX train this year. TriMet issued a statement to the media which said they were stepping up presence and patrols on the system to ensure this remains an isolated incident.
What cut is this?
There's no cut. I'm just
you
thinking...
looked at me with that sound like there was an audio.
No, I'm just kind of... First of all, you can't ensure that this remains an isolated incident when this is the third time. The first time would have been an isolated
incident. That's the
incident.
Whole, the door and the barn and the horse.
Yeah.
The glue.
Sunday's stabbing occurred just after midnight in the 1000 block of North Interstate Avenue near the Rose Garden. Responding officers said they arrived to find Andy Bloomstrom, 30, lying on the ground, suffering from multiple stab wounds. The suspect, 22-year-old Jennifer Poston, was still on the MAX train and police arrested her at the scene. Sergeant Pete Simpson said officers learned the victim was riding the Max with several friends when Poston held the door open waiting for someone. A verbal argument between the two turned physical, resulting in Poston stabbing the victim three times, twice in the chest and once in the left forearm. Blibson was transported to Legacy Emanuel Hospital for treatment and is listed in fair condition. Poston was booked into Multnomah County Jail on account of assault.
You know who never stabs anybody is Tom Poston.
Well, not anymore.
I mean, I can count on zero fingers the number. Well, no, one finger the number of times that guy stabbed somebody. And the and that time it was really called for. I mean, the guy had it coming. Really, he was begging for it.
But also, like in his 60s, gets married to Suzanne Plachette.
Hey, no.
I mean, come on.
Indeed. You are listening to Legion of News. Hello, everyone.
Suzanne Plachette was a dish.
She dead?
Her? No, I don't know.
I just don't know.
I know Tom Poston is dead.
I don't know the answer.
I don't know if she is.
All right. Well, I mean, okay. Anyway, thank you for joining us. Later on this hour, you get your entertainment news, also Science on the March. It is 12:19 for those of you listening live here in Portland, Oregon, or wherever you might be on God's green earth. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor. You can get this program later on today via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or at legionofnews.com. If you find yourself leaving home, wandering the earth like the happy wanderer of yore, or perhaps just, sent to get the boss's laundry or something because he's a dick, you can take the program with you on your mobile device. That is mobile.cascadia.fm, mobile.cascadia.fm. Here's Don Taylor.
President Obama will get back on the bus this
Who?
Week. President Barack Obama.
See the guy with the overalls on Newhart?
Yes, he's an Ivy League educated wealthy man who is sort of in charge of our whole country, but yet is just one of the folks.
Again, thinking of Tom Poston.
Right.
All right. Sorry.
He will be back on the bus, not in the back of the bus, but back on the bus.
Wow. Okay.
For a 3-day tour.
You
through,
back on the bus.
3-day tour through North Carolina and Virginia, aimed at accomplishing two separate but related goals. The first is to win support for his $447 billion jobs package. Senate Republicans have already effectively killed any chance that the complete proposal will be enacted, but the White House is pressing on nonetheless and is urging lawmakers to take up what they can in smaller chunks.
Usually Republicans just, they ineffectively kill things. You know, they kill it, but it takes a long, long time, so everybody got to get their wax in.
Like cancer.
Yeah, everybody got to, it's a whole, everybody gets to punch.
As the Associated Press put it, this means the president's rallying cry this week could go from pass of this bill to pass all of these other bills. With passage of the president's job proposals, ostensibly the main reason for his southern swing, the effort is also has some rather clear political goals. Politico explains that the 3-day bus tour with stops in rural towns, suburbs, and several cities literally traces an escape route for Obama's reelection campaign through two states he carried in 2008 that are must wins next year, even if Obama succeeds in recapturing lost ground in more traditional battlegrounds like Ohio,
Florida. Is that like
Ohio,
if they're chased out of town by Paul Begala or somebody? Like there's a tarring and feathering committee being put together?
In the Bugs Bunny cartoons, where there's always a sign that says county line.
Yes.
And then once Bugs is on the other side of the county line, Yosemite Sam can't chase him anymore.
Okay,
it's kind of like that.
Okay, it's not like that because that doesn't happen. What you're thinking of, you're conflating two things.
Oh.
You're conflating the Foghorn Leghorn cartoon where he gets the line where the dog's leash doesn't go past and he paints the dog's tongue green, and the Chickasaw County line in Dukes of Hazzard. Over which the Duke boys cannot be arrested by Sheriff Little.
I do believe there also have been the county line where the sheriff could not chase Bugs Bunny.
But Yosemite Sam wasn't a sheriff.
Sometimes he was a sheriff. Sometimes he was a bad guy. Sometimes he was a pirate.
And he was also a Confederate soldier at one point.
He was also a Viking once, I believe, too.
No, that was Elmer Fudd.
Oh, okay.
You just read the news. I'll do the Bugs Bunny jokes.
Okay. The Wall Street Journal, which also notes the underlying political motivation for the tour, explains what Team Obama sees when it looks at North Carolina and Virginia. They write...
Tobacco.
Yes. Tobacco.
Okay.
Both states have seen an influx of Northerners and high-tech workers and other professionals who tend to vote Democratic. That, combined with a large black population, has made them both swing states. So he's cruising through... Through the South now.
He's cruising and swinging.
Yes.
He's our most sexually active president.
Before he left town, however, he did speak Sunday at the dedication of the new Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial
in Washington. You folks are on your own. I've got money, and this job isn't nearly as fun as I thought it would be. So have fun fixing your economy. Bye now.
That's the crowd going wild.
Okay.
Now, he actually said something different. Right.
It is right that we honor that march, that we lift up Dr. King's I Have a Dream speech, for without that shining moment, without Dr. King's glorious words, we might not have had the courage to come as far as we have.
Here's the thing about this. Mm-hmm. Even I know this, and I'm as non-Nubian as they come. You can't try to outdo Martin Luther King and that speech when you're talking about him. That's a thing where you just got to, like, dial it down. You got to just deliver it flat. Yeah. You just phone it in, because it's like it just... And that's a fail. You just can't... You can't do that. You can't try to amp up your own rhetoric to, like, be equal to that if you're talking about him. It's just not going to work.
Obama said King takes his place alongside other immortals.
In this place...
Such as Odin, the god of sound.
Stand for all time.
Also Galactus, eater of worlds.
Among monuments to those who fathered this nation.
Ooh, also the entire Q continuum race and Mitzelplik.
And those who defended it.
Okay. I don't even know what he was saying there. No. He's busy making Mitzelplik references.
Yeah. Okay. Let's be done with that. England's Ed Martin was accused of hiding the letter G during the World Scrabble Championship this weekend.
In his buttocks.
Not sure where he was supposedly hidden it, but ostensibly he won the match in Warsaw, and a Thai player accused him of hiding the letter G and wanted him to be taken to a bathroom so he could be strip searched.
When a guy from Thailand wants you to be taken to a bathroom, it's not because you're hiding the letter G.
Yeah. No evidence was presented to support the Thai player's allegation, so the strip search did not actually happen.
You mean G as in Gary Glitter? Huh? Mr. Thailand?
But I believe this was the first time there has ever been a demand for a strip search at the World Scrabble Championship.
Well, that's retarded. Can't they just count the tiles?
I believe so. Yes.
I mean, there's X tiles on the board. There's X tiles on everybody's rack.
If there's one missing or an extra one.
And then there's all the tiles in the box. Yeah. I mean, like, that's just stupid. That's a thing that's dumb because you know there's an easy way to figure it out.
Nigel Richards, a New Zealander, took the overall title of World Scrabble Champion after scoring 95 points with the word omnified.
That comes with an ancillary title, World's Dullest Man.
Well, he also won 12,700 pounds, which is, I think, about...
That's like $4.
That's like 50 bucks. Mr. Richards would have scored little for his acceptance speech, which he just responded when he was told he won. He said, nice. It was the second time Mr. Richards has claimed the title. He also won in 2007. He beat 116 competitors from 44 countries to be named Scrabble champion. The deciding rubber was a comfortable 476 to 334 win for Mr. Richards. He was described as an exceptional player by Scrabble Victoria President Carol Johnson, who was nevertheless delighted by Mr. Fisher's efforts. He said, she said, it's just fantastic. He's a lovely chap. He's so good for Scrabble in Victoria and Australia, and he's a nice person to boot.
Did she really sound like that?
She said exactly like that.
Like Miss Marple?
Yes.
Okay.
Only maybe more Australian, because I don't really do that.
You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. I don't know why. Thank you for joining us. Next hour of the Rick Emerson Radio Program, Snuff Watch, Cannibal Watch, Taser Watch, Aaron Duran, also a recap of last night's season premiere of Walking Dead. We'll talk to Mr. Ryan White for The Oregonian and more. Here is Dawn Taylor.
Science! Let's do science.
Do we have to do science? We just did science.
Everyone loves science.
We just did science last week. All right, everyone hold on. And, yeah. All right. Here's your Science in the March for Monday, October 17th. 2011.
The Northern Hemisphere's flu season will soon be here. If you, Rick Emerson, are getting vaccinated and tweet it, will your followers follow you to your doctor's office? Or are they the sort of people who have already booked an appointment?
This is a stupid story.
Researchers in the U.S.
I don't even know what that question means.
It means, like, if you talk on this show, for example, and say, hey, or you go on Twitter and you say, hey, I'm getting a flu shot.
Will everyone follow me to the doctor's office?
Will people say, where are you going to the doctor? I'll go there, too.
Yes, because that wouldn't be creepy and, I think, illegal.
Well, researchers in the U.S. have mined Twitter to map who tweets for and against flu vaccination and found that the results parallel the prevalence of vaccination itself. Now they want to find out whether Twitter just reflects attitudes to vaccination or if it helps spread them. Marcel Salathe of Penn State University in University Park, Pennsylvania, collected 478,000 tweets referring to flu in late 2009 when vaccination for the swine flu pandemic became available in the U.S. A team of students categorized 10% of the tweets as for, against, or neutral about vaccination. These tweets were then used to create a computerized screening test that classified the rest.
Is it about vaccination in general or about flu vaccination?
Well, they found that vaccination rates were lower in areas where tweets tended to be more negative about vaccination and vice versa.
Well,
and so they're saying such mapping could help target health information campaigns. He said,
So we know where the dumb people are.
If we know where people are particularly misinformed, then we know where we should do a better job of informing.
No, I think we all know the answer is we know what areas of the country we can just write off. More vaccine for the rest of us. Am I right?
Right.
Okay, excellent. I mean, seriously, I'm not going to vaccinate. Fine. Goodbye. You know, my kids aren't going to be. Okay, that's great. That's wonderful. Can I have your house? How about your job? How about you just give us your money now?
Volkswagen announced last month that certain of their 2012 models will be the first cars from any of the 19 automakers currently offering HD radios to sport the new artist experience feature.
An HD radio, really?
It's actually Ubiquiti Digital's brand name for their digital AM/FM system.
Yes, make sure to choose a name that most people can't spell.
Right. Also, it does not mean high-definition digital. It does not mean hybrid digital. It basically doesn't mean anything. They just branded their particular digital radio system as HD radio.
I'm surprised they... What does it mean? How would it be different from a normal radio if I asked them, like, what makes this radio different? Because HD... Here's the reason I ask. Because HD radio, as I understand it, is a trademark of the National Association of Broadcasters. That is because, like, you know, you get a station like Kink or something. There's Kink and there's Kink 1 and Kink 2, or Kink 2 and Kink 3, which are their HD channels. So that is a thing that the terrestrial radio groups actually own a trademark on, I believe. So I'm curious as to what this HD radio actually is.
I can't tell you.
Okay.
I just tell you that the new artist experience feature will display logos, album art, and artist images on their premium 8 video screen, radio screens.
That's great. It's 2001.
The other popular features that HD Radio has includes digital sound, live pause, and iTunes tagging.
Yeah.
So it's like a DVR radio.
If only I had something that could do that now that I owned that was tiny and that I didn't have to buy a new car to get. If only there was some way to get digital. If only there was some way that, let's say, people listening to my voice right now could get digital sound. Okay.
Well, while recent media attention around car stereos has tended to focus on internet radio, especially in regard to Pandora, navigation, and other features, HD radio has been quietly growing in the background. Today, over 2,000 AM and FM stations broadcast with HD radio technology, with more than 1,300 additional digital-only FM multicast channels.
That's like saying that because there's 50,000 web pages about, like, garlic as a sexual aid, everybody's into it. I mean, just because you put it there doesn't mean anybody's using it. I'm just saying.
I just read them, man.
I'd be curious to know more about that, because the HD radio thing, which the terrestrial media, God bless them, have been latching onto just for years now, thinking it's going to be their salvation, which it will not be, by the way. Has just not really achieved any traction, or what do you call it, success, or revenue, or any sort of penetration among anybody in terms of mindset or awareness. Yep. It's nitpicking, I know, but...
Living things self-replicate, Rick Emerson, but artificial materials generally don't, at least until now.
I'm sorry, you gotta... And what?
At least until now.
Thank you.
New York University researchers led by Paul Chaykin have found a way to use synthetic DNA to make molecules that reproduce themselves. The technique gives scientists a tool to create different combinations on the DNA that aren't necessarily available in nature. That opens up billions of possibilities for building completely new materials and even molecular machines. Chaykin and his colleagues reported their results in this week's journal, Nature. Inside a living cell, enzymes split DNA's ladder-like double helix molecule down the middle, leaving two single strands of nucleotides. The enzymes then tack on to each half in order to create an identical copy. Where there was one double helix of DNA, there is now two. The cell then uses the copied DNA to perform a biological function, such as build a protein, for example. This replication is crucial to a life form's ability to exist and survive. In this case, the researchers created two slightly different molecular tiles, each one made of 10 strands of DNA. Next, they seeded a solution with a string of seven tiles. The string catalyzed in the solution and instructed the molecules to form a complementary seven-tile sequence, a duplicate of the original. This offspring was then used to create a subsequent duplicate.
I'm so confused by this story.
Well, as New Scientist put it, the magazine said, although these particular strings were designed as a proof of principle without any practical application in mind, the technique could allow more useful structures to be rapidly and easily grown. Other molecules with useful or novel properties could be attached to the DNA tiles. The DNA itself could act as a scaffold, arranging the other molecules into a desired structure, and later create more and more copies. In other words, we can now create molecules of things that there were not actually molecules before, and they can self-replicate through DNA, thus basically ending in the destruction of mankind as we know it.
Okay. Well, that's great. I won't bother to get a new calendar for next year.
Yes. And finally, there are a bewildering choice of screens available to modern video gamers, what with HD, 3D, touch, and more. But perhaps the next generation of games will do away with all of that and replace your display with a wall. Carl Willis and colleagues at Disney Research Labs in Pittsburgh have come up with a multiplayer gaming system called Side by Side that uses handheld projectors to let you play on any nearby surface. Side by Side uses modified projectors that emit both infrared and visible light. Invisible infrared markers that track the interactions between players are projected on top of the game's graphics, which are currently limited to a single green color since the other two colors of the red, green, and blue projector are replaced by infrared. Each player has a prototype device that contains a modified projector along with an infrared camera to detect the markers and a button for interactions while processing is handled by a MacBook Pro. Games include competitive boxing and cooperative brick destruction. The system can also be used for more mundane tasks, such as transferring files. Side by Side is a multiplayer version of Willis's previous project known as Motion Beam, which only allowed for single-player gaming. He says his new version lets people play together with ease, so no cameras installed in the room, no Bluetooth pairing, no Wi-Fi setup is required. This is possibly a world first and something, he said, we believe is going to make gaming with a handheld projector very attractive in the future.
So you can have a wall-sized television, basically.
Yes, and your gaming system is in your handheld device and it just projects it on the wall in front of you so you don't actually need any kind of a monitor.
Excellent. All we need is the white clown show and I'm going to be set.
And then it will replicate itself with its crazy DNA and it will grow all over your arms and turn you into a robot.
I think I would just be...
Something out of a Cronenberg movie.
I think I'd just be like a thing you showed movies on then. If I was just covered in movie screens. I'd be like the illustrated man, but I wouldn't be. I'd be like the projected man.
Yeah.
There's a joke there somewhere.
I don't know.
All right.
That's all the news.
Oh, thank God.
Or the science, anyway.
Oh, damn. All right. There's your science on the march for Monday, October 17th, 2011. Still to come this hour, your entertainment news. And coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program at rickemersonshow.com. That is rickemersonshow.com. Today we'll talk to Mr. Aaron Duran. Also, Ryan White, music editor from The Oregonian. We will have a Snuff Watch, Cannibal Watch, Taser Watch, and a recap of last night's season premiere of Walking Dead on AMC. Here is Don Taylor.
Republican presidential candidate Herman Cain is defending his proposed 999 tax plan. It would replace almost all of the existing tax code with a 9% federal sales tax and 9% taxes on corporations and individual incomes. Cain conceded some people will have to pay higher taxes.
The people who spend more money on new goods. The sales tax only applies to people who buy new goods, not used goods. That's a big difference that doesn't come out.
By the way, since 46% of Americans currently pay no income tax, saying that it's going to be like a tax increase for some people, that doesn't really, I think that undersells the point. I think that understates it.
Cain said people are buying into his message.
Because of the substance of my ideas. When I talk to people and I talk to crowds and I get a response based upon how I describe the ideas.
By the way, nobody named Herman is ever going to be president. Just FYI. Just in case you're wanting to handicap that right now, never going to have a President Herman. It's not going to happen.
Also,
we had President Herbert, which is, it's close enough.
Also, we've had guys like Steve Forbes talk flat tax before, and nobody ever wants to go for it. It just doesn't fly. It never flies.
Well, because because it's a bad idea. Because that's, I mean, look, I am not the guy that they bring in to do the United States tax code, and there's a reason why that's true and a good idea. But something that raises taxes on people who are making, which it generally does, by the way, people who are making less money, and lowers taxes on people who are making more money, is probably not going to fly in the long run. Whatever anybody thinks of it, like, ideologically, it just seems like a thing that, you know why it's appealing? It's appealing because it's simple. That's the only reason. It's not even that it's a good idea. It's that it's a simple idea. And I don't mean that in a snarky way. People like really, really sort of simple, basic ideas. Do you remember, I've talked about this before, like, the Rudy Giuliani could have been president right now if he had just stuck to the one legitimately great idea that he had. He had this one really, really brilliant idea, which is reducing the entire tax code, or the entire tax rate you'd have to fill out, your 1040 or whatever, to one side of one 8x11 piece of paper in like 12-point type. I mean, and he was actually that specific. He's like, you'll have one sheet of paper, 8x11, 12-point type, one side of it, that's it. And he actually had a replica. He had it in his pocket. And he would take it out of these campaign rallies. They would be talking and say, well, what you've got right here. And he would just take it out of his pocket and he would hold it up and he'd say, this is the tax form you'll fill out. It's one side of one piece of paper. That's it. And I mean, and that was a great, great, great idea, because if nothing else, it was concrete and it was specific, and that's the sort of thing that people like. And it's, for some reason, his advisors kept telling him to hit the 9/11 thing, which, like, it wasn't really enough to kind of put him over the top. If he had just stuck with that, that would have to put him in the White House. I'm telling you right now. It's like if the president just said, look, probably in the grand scheme of things, nothing's really going to get better. We don't really fix anything. We don't really solve stuff, you know. But I tell you what, you put me in office, shoes are going to be $10. Period. Shoes, doesn't matter. You're going to get shoes for $10 a pair.
And free tacos every Tuesday.
And a pizza once a month. And that, for the length of my presidency, $10 shoes, one free pizza a month. Large, two toppings, done. I'd vote for that guy right there if I thought that there was a reasonable chance he could do something specific.
Well, Sesame Street's YouTube channel was hacked this weekend, leaving its normally family-friendly content replaced with pornographic content, according to a report on the tech blog The Next Web. YouTube had the content removed in 22 minutes, according to the report, and as of this writing, the show's channel has been replaced by a message saying it's unavailable. Actually, this morning, it was back up and running, so Sesame Street's YouTube channel is once again functional.
I got many, many screen caps of that sent to me.
YouTube representatives declined to comment on Sesame Street's incident, but said the removal of the content was in keeping with user guidelines. A YouTube spokesperson said, YouTube's community guidelines prohibit graphic content. As always, we remove inappropriate material as soon as we are made aware of it. Hackers also altered the Sesame Street YouTube channel's profile page to add the name Mr. Edexwix as the user, according to a screenshot posted by Naked Security. The profile also included the following message: who doesn't love porn, kids? Right, everyone loves it. I'm Mr. Edwixwix, and my partner, Mr. Suicider91, are here to bring you many nice content. Please don't let Sesame Street to get this account back, kids. Please let me and Mr. Suicider91 have it, and we gonna make all the America happy.
The best part is at the top, there's this, and I typically don't cotton to people who do some sort of crude or pornographic sort of rendering of children's things, because I just find that's like, it's just like a cheap and usually not funny way to appear as though you are edgy and amusing. This actually was kind of well done, especially because things that were innocuous suddenly seemed really profane. Like at the top of the Sesame Street YouTube page, there was the Sesame Street logo in the middle, and then on either side of it were four Muppets, and they were playing tug of war, and the rope went across the top of the screen. But of course, then it just looked like they were having some sort of butt sex conga line. So it was sort of well done.
Saturday was the first day of Portland's ban on plastic bags at the checkout counter, and clerks were busy explaining the change to shoppers. Mayor Sam Adams also spoke out, offering encouragement to shoppers. The ban applies to those thin plastic bags that we see at checkout stands at larger grocery stores and places like Target, Walmart, or Walgreens. Under the ban, shoppers will still be able to get paper bags at no additional cost. Stores that fail to comply with the ban could face a $500 fine. Many stores were also offering shoppers alternatives. At Safeway, customers could purchase much thicker, reusable plastic bags for 10 cents. Dan Floyd, a spokesperson for Safeway, said, Ultimately, the goal with the City of Portland Safeway and other retailers is to move our customers to reusable bags, and we're still going to provide the opportunity to our customers to utilize reusable cloth and reusable plastic. The ban has strong support in Portland, but Adam said he knew some shoppers would still be unhappy about the rules. He said at an event in Northeast Portland, "Changing habits is always hard. I want everyone to be really nice to the cashiers at the checkout lines. You can be grumpy with your mayor. Don't be grumpy with the cashiers."
You should totally, somebody should have like a reusable bag made out of like rabbit pelt or just something horrifying, you know, or just something that had like a whale's face on the side of it. Just looked as though it were just stitched together out of blubber.
I completely forgot that was going on this weekend, by the way. The only place I went and bought anything was Trader Joe's. And I always bring my own bag to Trader Joe's anyway. And even if you don't bring your bag to Trader Joe's, they've always used paper bags.
Is this just at supermarkets or at stores?
This is any store that uses those plastic choppy bags.
Mm-hmm.
So within the city limits of Portland. So
Powell's Books this morning.
Like that.
Yeah. Got that this morning at Powell's Books.
Oh, Powell's. They could be fined $500.
By the way, it wasn't given an option.
Oh.
Didn't say, would you like that in something else?
Well,
I'm not trying to get anybody in trouble. I'm just saying.
I think you just did.
I'm just saying, I don't know that. It seems like that might not actually be the law everywhere. Because I can't just see Powell's disregarding that. They're so, you know, community tethered and whatever. And they're big hippies. So I can't. I can't imagine that they would just sort of go, we're not going to follow that.
Is that the kind with also, the handle thingy and stuff?
Yeah. Oh. Also, Plaid Pantry this morning. Same thing. Plastic bag at Plaid Pantry.
Yeah.
So with the handle. And again, I don't think it's just because they've all decided, like, it's not they're really going to fine us because the city probably will fine them. So that's odd. All right.
Dominic Strauss-Kahn's alleged sex life has him back in the headlines. The former IMF chief is asking to speak to French police to squash reports he was involved with an alleged prostitution ring in France and Belgium. Strauss-Kahn was linked to an ongoing investigation into the ring by a report in the Journal du Dimanche over the weekend that generated headlines on both sides of the Atlantic. The weekly newspaper claimed, among other things, that the French politician was one of the ring's high-profile clients and that a French police officer was tasked with escorting its prostitutes from the city of Lille to New York to have sex with Strauss-Kahn. While the report did not suggest that Strauss-Kahn was a key figure in the suspected ring, it did report that he would likely be questioned by police. One of Strauss-Kahn's lawyers told the Associated Press that the French politician has not been contacted by detectives, but that he's nonetheless asking to speak to police to put an end to these insinuations and extrapolations. So the Britain Sky News reports investigators believe they've uncovered a well-connected ring bringing women over the border from Belgium to have sex with wealthy clients in hotels. And according to Reuters, three managers at the luxury Carlton Hotel have been detained this past week, and the hotel has been temporarily shuttered during the investigation.
Really, at this point, it seems like anybody, especially in Europe, who's able to get something going with the economy, personal or otherwise, really just needs our respect.
I think so.
Somebody who's figured out a way to actually make money. I mean, God bless them.
I'm surprised in Europe they still have a problem with prostitution. I thought we were past that.
I don't know that they really do as such. I think they do when they want to make an example of somebody. Well, it's like for the longest time, I think it was in Spain. Well, the president of Spain would like he was married and like a bunch of kids. And like he'd show up at a state dinner. Who's that? Some whore, you know, and it was just like his mistress or whatever. And it was just sort of understood. Everybody went, well, all right, then. Very good. Dumping you on then, you know, and it's like they would just sort of, you know, and I think everybody was sort of like it was just I think it was an understood part of the it's in their culture. Done.
All right.
Yeah, they're way ahead of us on these sorts of things.
So.
All right.
Let's do our entertainment.
I'm not going to go there for whores, though, because the dollar is really, really weak right now. It's like you only get half the whore. What are we doing here? Entertainment news?
Yes.
All right. Here's your entertainment news for Monday, October 17th.
In case you haven't been watching Steven Seagal, Lawman, a reality show that recklessly allows the faded action star to actually work as an officer of the law, Steven Seagal wants to make a difference. Things have been problematic, however. The biggest of these problems ended up in Seagal being blamed for the death of a puppy. Ignoring this potentially important warning sign, he has just been sworn in as deputy sheriff for Hudspeth County, Texas.
Awesome.
We have a picture of the swearing in, by the way. Steven Seagal is, to put it kindly,
ham-like,
kind of puffy.
Yeah, no, he's there's a lot of him to go around.
Yeah. His main responsibility will be seeking out people trying to illegally cross the border from Mexico. not trying to actually stop terrorists, unfortunately. He personally contacted County Sheriff Arvin West about getting involved. West said, Mr. Sigal is not in this for the celebrity or publicity. He has a sincere passion for his country, and he wants to do more to help. I think he will make a significant contribution to this office and to our community. The job starts in January.
I wonder, I mean, I guess they're thinking that maybe he'll bring more attention to the law fighting. It's not like anybody's going to recognize him, though, is the thing. Like, when he comes to, when Chuck Norris comes to arrest you, you'll know it's Chuck Norris. Like, when that guy, you know, boom, in your door, and he's, like, cuffing you, you'd be like, God damn, it's Chuck Norris. Steven Seagal comes in, and it's like you just go, God, Jim Belushi's arresting me. I don't understand. What's going on?
The sheriff is no...
No walk in the park?
Is no walk in the park. Apparently, in this particular county in Texas, I don't think the sheriff's department does a lot other than just eat ribs.
You'll have a chance to see this. It'll be up in just a second at, you sons of bitches, at rickemerson.com/pictures. Regardless of whether you type the goddamn www or not now.
Oh, look at you.
Christ Almighty.
Look at you catering to the masses.
Well, it's not really the masses. It's... I forget her name. I think her name was Vicky, and she was snarking at me.
Although he's been cagey about his sexuality in the past, Star Trek and, well, just Star Trek, really, star Zachary Quinto refers to himself as a gay man in an interview with New York Magazine about his new film, Margin Call. While speaking about his recent Broadway stint in Angels of America, Quinto remarked, "As a gay man, it made me feel like there's still so much work to be done, and there's still so many things that need to be looked at and addressed." He will next be seen playing a gay interior designer on FX's American Horror Story. He's also written a blog entry on his official website about his decision to come out. He said he was inspired to do so after the highly publicized suicide of Jamie Rotemeier. And he wrote in detail that when he found out that Jamie Rotemeier killed himself, Rotemeier had made an It Gets Better video only months before taking his own life. Quinto said, I also made an It Gets Better video last year in the wake of the senseless and tragic gay teen suicides that were sweeping the nation at the time. But in light of Jamie's death, it became clear to me in an instant that living a gay life without publicly acknowledging it is simply not enough to make any significant contribution to the immense work that lies ahead on the road to complete equality.
So, by the way, I'm looking at this picture of Steven Seagal. You can see this at rickemerson.com/pictures or whatever.
However you get there.
Or just, you know... I don't know, click randomly on the internet until you find the page. He really is... the best thing about the Steven Seagal picture is not only is he huge, but he's standing there, like he's raising his hand to take the oath, and the other hand is just shoved into his pocket like he's just sort of, you know, like he's just waiting to get to the dog track or something. Like he could not possibly care less about this part of, like, he just wants to get back.
He's got his sunglasses on. He's, you know, wearing his big baggy shirt, which is fooling no one anymore. It wasn't fooling anyone in the last few movies he made when he was only shot from, like, the waist up and he was wearing, like, muumuus.
This is like Steven Seagal playing James Gandolfini.
Yeah.
Okay.
Entertainment Weekly has confirmed that rapper Tone Loke was hospitalized this weekend after collapsing on stage during an Atlantic concert. Now the rapper has been released from the hospital, according to his manager. Bobby Vasson, his manager, said Tone is exhausted after performing many shows in the last few months and is fine now and out of the hospital. Tone Loke was previously hospitalized for exhaustion after a Pensacola Beach concert in 2009. After 27 years of marriage, Sonic Youth band members Thurston Moore and Kim Gordon have announced their split, according to a statement released by the band's label. In a statement, the pair said Sonic Youth would honor their November tour dates, which will take them to South America, but, quote, plans beyond that tour are uncertain.
Was the rest of the statement long and droning and pointless, and did Rolling Stone call it genius?
Yeah.
Okay.
And finally, Mitchell Musso, who played Oliver Oaken on Hannah Montana, was arrested for drunk driving yesterday in the L.A. suburb of Burbank. The actor was popped out of jail early Sunday morning, according to Burbank Police Sergeant Sean Kelly. Kelly said an officer was directing traffic and Musso failed to slow down when coming to the intersection. He didn't obey instructions and was pulled over. A DUI investigation was held and he was given a field sobriety test. Musso is 20 years old, so any alcohol in his system is illegal, and he was well over the legal limit. Musso was arrested at 3:43 a.m., taken to jail, and bail was set at $5,000. Musso spent a few hours drying out and was ultimately allowed to go free without having to pay bail because, Kelly said, quote, He had no warrants or anything like that.
Or stuff.
Unquote. Musso, who released an album in 2009, is also known for voicing Jeremy Johnson on the Disney Channel series Phineas and Ferb, and is host of Disney Channel's reality series Prank Stars. No immediate comment from reps was available.
It is 12:53. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. This is your entertainment news. Are we continuing with entertainment news?
That's all the entertainment news.
We're done?
That's it.
We're finished.
We're done.
Right.
Done.
We'll end that.
Done.
Now. Coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program at rickemersonshow.com. Today, Snuff Watch, Taser Watch, Cannibal Watch, Walking Dead recap. We'll recap last night's season premiere. We'll also talk to Mr. Aaron Duran for The Week in Geek. He'll be in the studio with us, and I believe we'll have a phone call from Mr. Ryan White, music editor at The Oregonian. Here is Don Taylor.
A Chicago woman was charged with misdemeanor domestic battery Sunday after allegedly throwing cupcakes at her husband and hitting him over the head. Police told the Chicago Sun-Times that Dawn Montesdioka, 60, threw the treats at her 56-year-old husband in their home on Saturday. The Tribune reports, after that, she reached for the box of desserts and directed a fusillade of snack cakes at his head and body, her husband told police. Several of the confections apparently hit their mark as the man's head and shirt were smudged with icing when officers arrived. Police told the Sun-Times the woman had used an aggressive tone with officers, and a judge set her bail at $10,000 during the Sunday hearing. Though her husband told police he was scared for his safety, the Tribune reports the alleged victim has been arrested himself three times since 2003 on battery or domestic battery charges, all of which were eventually dropped.
By the way, I don't have time to talk. Well, I do have time, but I won't. I won't talk about it now because I'm obnoxious. So I will. I'll just tease you with this. I'll just dangle it in front of you and then snatch it away. We'll talk about this more next hour, but I'm almost certain. I mean, I'm for all intents and purposes, I am positive that my next door neighbor came within like a hair's breadth of being tased by a cop last night. And I was right there, too. And I'm not saying that I was rooting for it to happen.
Yes, you were.
Well, a little bit. So it was awesome. I mean, not for me, but I mean, it was. Anyways, we'll talk more about it next hour. But it was early this morning. So it's quite a night in the quite a night in the Emerson neighborhood. So we'll talk more about that next hour.
Okay. The state's largest doctor group in California, the California Medical Association, questioned the medical value of marijuana, but says it's time for it to be legal and regulated by like alcohol and tobacco. The group's spokeswoman claims it's the first major medical association in the country to call for the drug's legalization. Dr. James T. Hay, the president-elect of CMA, said it may be the first organization of its kind to take this position, but we won't be the last. This is a carefully considered, deliberative decision made exclusively on medical and scientific grounds. As physicians, we need to have a better understanding about the benefits and risks of medical cannabis so we can provide the best care possible to our patients. The organization represents more than 35,000 physicians across California and took the position even as it stated that marijuana has few proven health benefits. But the CMA insists that more research needs to be done on the drug, and that can't happen until physicians don't have to worry about giving patients something that's illegal under federal law. While the group recognized the substance does carry health risks, quote, the consequences of criminalization outweigh the hazards, unquote. Dr. Don Lyman, who wrote the new policy, said it's an uncomfortable position for doctors. It's an open question whether cannabis is useful or not. That question can only be answered once it's legalized and more research is done. For now, it's clear the current laws have proven to be a failed public health policy, he said.
So there you go. We have 44 seconds here.
Really? Wow. Okay.
If you'd like, there's always Inuit throat singing.
No! 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 A historic meeting between officials from North and South Korea is taking place this week in Athens, Georgia. Dr. Han Park, a professor at the University of Georgia, is hosting the event. He's hoping the summit will improve the relationship between the two countries.
Try to build mutual trust and eliminate misunderstandings. That's what we're trying to do here. That's what I expect to be done.
That's Frank Burns, such weasel.
And where better to work on eliminating racial misunderstandings than Georgia?
Well, then they can get up and they can jam with REM afterwards.
Park is hoping these talks will help improve the relationship between the two countries.
There's no way you can allow North Korea to become a legitimate nuclear state. then there's no way that we can control, curtail the proliferation of nuclear weapons throughout the world.
You know, this is why you're not a first world power. There's no way. It can't be done. It's impossible. What kind of talk is that, honestly? All right.
Look it down on the whole thing.
Seriously. Really. Be a Korea can. Be Korea can.
Not a South Korea can.
Yeah, I got nothing. No. With that, we bring a shameful end to this episode of Legion of News. We thank you for joining us. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, Hive of the Milkpacking District in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, John Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic, provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agler, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. As always, this program is available later on the day via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here or at legionofnews.com. Thank you for listening. We'll see you again tomorrow. Have a safe and satisfying Monday, won't you?